Kane is in the building.
Guys, you know how much we love Liberty shirts. Their flannels are unbelievable, and when we were job hunting, we wore Liberty shirts for our interviews and now to work every day. We thought Liberty was our secret until we started seeing their shirts on TV on Fox Sports every Saturday and Sunday. Now we know they are for real, but they are still our secret. Save 10% on your order when you enter the promo code 3PEAT at checkout.
Welcome back, everyone, to the 15th episode of the fourth season, and actually the final episode of the fourth season. I'm your host, Stephen Benazza, and once again, I'm joined alongside
Alex Castle,
Josh Romowitz,
and of course, our social media guy, TJ.
It's always good to be back, boys. Thanks for having me, as always.
Of course, dude. This show's never the same without you, you know? So we got quite a few things to talk about today. First with the NFL, coach already got the boot, possibly some in the near future as the season comes to an end. So we'll dive more into that. And then within the NFL and NBA and even the NHL, a lot of leagues suffering from a lot of COVID outbreaks. So we'll definitely talk about that. And then to kind of wrap things up, talk a little college football, crazy time within college football. And before we end it off for season four, we'll give a little preview of guys who we think will help lead their teams within the playoffs to the playoffs and how, and you know, the X factors for the playoffs. So let's go back to the top of the show, top what I mentioned first. And that's the coach that's being fired, Sir Urban Meyer. Late last night happened. Urban Meyer, no longer the coach in Jacksonville. And I think none of us are Jaguars fans, but I think we can all agree that was a smart move. He just did not work out at all. So, Fromwitz, obviously, I think you agree that it's a good move. But what don't you think worked out with Urban Meyer in the Jacksonville?
It just wasn't a fit to begin with. And I think that just is on Urban himself, because you look at his track record and yes, he has the national titles that he's won, but there's also been controversies that have followed him from Florida to Ohio State and into Jacksonville. So it really didn't surprise that many people that there's going to be some sort of controversy in Jacksonville. It was really for most people, like as a matter of time, like how long until the controversy would come out. And he got a 5-year deal and only lasted 13 games into his first year before he got the boot. I think the coaching days are well behind him, and everyone thought his coaching days would be behind him when he left Florida the first time he retired from coaching. Then, okay, he goes to Ohio State, and then people thought he was done then again. But then he ends up signing with Jacksonville, and It shouldn't have happened in the first place. I was confused by the signing when it happened. I don't know what the intent was. I didn't see him as a long-term solution to begin with. And now this just further solidifies almost everyone's opinion on him.
And also, Adam Schefter tweeted after the news with Urban Meyer, first-time NFL head coaches that are hired from college, they have not seen that much success. You know, Urban Meyer, 2-11, and then that was it. Matt Rhule went from Temple to Baylor, now Carolina. He's 10-19, and Carolina's roster wasn't the best, but they've got some pieces and still hasn't found ways to win, especially in that division that, besides the Buccaneers, is kind of up for grabs. And then, you know, Chip Kelly went 26-21, Doug Marrone 15-17. Greg Schiano, 11-21. Nick Saban, who's had so much success in college, went 15-17. Steve Spurrier, same thing, 12-20. Really, the only guy that stands out on this list that has a really solid record in the NFL and really probably has seen the most success was Jim Harbaugh, who went 44-19-1. Obviously, we know made it to a few NFC championships with the Niners, made the Super Bowl appearance against his brother, against the Ravens in the Super Bowl that they ended up losing. So, Castle, why do you think these a lot of these college head coaches who, I mean, down the list, Chip Kelly was very successful at Oregon. Matt Rhule was very, very successful building up Temple, then building up Baylor. Bill O'Brien with Penn State. Obviously, we know Nick Saban with LSU and Bama. Steve Spurrier with South Carolina. So how come these guys seem to have a lot of success in college, but then when they make it to the NFL, just they can't put it together, and then they have a short time span that they're coaching the NFL, and then they don't really get another chance. So why is that, you think?
You know, there are a lot of different factors that go into it, but I really don't know. I mean, because, you know, it's not like the sport's changing. It's still football. You're just playing with guys who are bigger, who are stronger, faster, more professional. They got more experience under their belt. So you would think with all that experience playing with or coaching the college kids that they would be able to step up their level. But I guess, you know, what it really boils down to, Steve, is it's a different level of competition. And I think when you're so accustomed to certain play styles and how the flow of these college games go, I mean, you look at a college game, a really good college game, quarterbacks are making these ridiculous throws, throwing bombs in the air. It's a lot more, I don't know if free's the word, but it's a lot more relaxed. And I think, you know, these college coaches have a lot more creativity that they can work with because these kids are so young and they're so moldable that when you go to the pros, it's a lot more strategy. You got to be more conservative. You got to, you know, plan your play calling out a lot more. And, you know, it really just comes down to that. These coaches, I don't think, can make the successful transition. And, you know, you went down the names and you talked about a lot of great coaches who were huge successes in college. I mean, Saban is the best coach in college football of all time. I mean, you know, he's changed how that program has looked and how other programs are created. But I would say that it's this, you know, how college and the pros are played, and it's really the transition.
Now I want to ask you a kind of follow-up question. So Trevor Lawrence coming out of Clemson, you know, a lot of success at Clemson, and a lot of people were saying one of the best QB prospects ever, especially in a while, probably since Andrew Luck. Now, do you think this 1 year Urban Meyer kind of ruined Trevor Lawrence, or do you think Trevor Lawrence would be able to rebound, especially if they get a good coach to work with him? Because it seemed like Urban Meyer didn't really work with Trevor Lawrence and didn't give him the tools he needed to succeed as of now.
It's one season, so the likelihood of Trevor Lawrence being able to shake this off and move on is pretty good. I mean, number one pick in the draft, highly regarded quarterback. He was doing some great things at Clemson. And I don't think he's going to let this, you know, it's not like he worked with this guy for multiple years, you know, not to pick on Josh here, but you look at what happened with Sam Darnold and Adam Gase. And a lot of people say that Adam Gase ruined Sam Darnold's confidence, which is why he still struggles today. And I don't think you're going to see that with Trevor Lawrence because he didn't even make it through a full season with Urban Meyer. So I think this is, you know, it's a great opportunity for Lawrence to really kind of reset a little bit and just use the rest of the season to develop a new chemistry with whoever this coach is. And even if it's not a permanent coach going forward, just have a good sense of team unity again, because I bet you that, you know, this whole experience with Urban Meyer has brought the Jags really close together. And I think they're going to definitely try to continue to hone in on that throughout the season. So to answer your question, I don't think this is going to ruin Lawrence. And I think it's just another piece that he's going to use to help him build even more.
I disagree to an extent with you. I don't think it'll ruin him, so I agree on that part. But I don't think he'll ever live up to the expectations that were put in front of him before the season started.
Because, oh, I agree with that.
But I think it has to do with Urban Meyer. I think what he had to deal with this year is definitely very difficult on a young quarterback. He's going to enter next season, potentially go having from college until now in 3 years, four different coaches. No one could deal with that and get adjusted to that. His offense is constantly different. Who knows what receivers he'll have next year? Who knows what James Robinson's his usage is going to be like, because we've seen how vocal he's been with how Urban Meyer benched him. So there's a lot of questions that the Jaguars got to answer in the offseason. And I do think Trevor Lawrence will do solid, but I think we're going to start to see more people point fingers at Trevor Lawrence, because I don't expect him to live up to the hype, because like Sam Darnold had to deal with Adam Gase, and now we saw with how we dealt with Matt Rhule, it really isn't, it's more of a mental thing than a physical aspect, where who knows if his confidence will ever get back there. And there's a good chance Jacksonville's next coach may not even be an offensive-minded guy. So how much will that actually help out Lawrence? I think they'd be foolish not to go after an offensive-minded guy. But if they go after like a defensive coordinator, because their defense certainly needs help as well, then who knows if Trevor Lawrence will even be like a top 15, top 20 quarterback in this league next year.
Well, you know, that's actually a great segue into my next question, because so now we know that Urban Meyer is gone. They still have Trevor Lawrence, who was, again, highly praised and highly, you know, heralded QB prospect coming out of the draft. So there's going to be, and they have a lot of cap space, I think. So there's going to be guys that are, I mean, and it's an NFL job. So there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be interested in that job. So, and this is for all of you guys, who do you think is the best fit for the Jaguars? Who do you think would be, you know, a couple of guys that you can think of that should interview for the job, should be considered for the job, and you know, your prediction of who might be coaching the head coach of the Jaguars in 2022.
Oh, I was talking about this with one of my friends today, and there are two names that come to mind, and I don't really know how realistic either one of them are. The first, his name has been tossed around for a while, and that's Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator. But it seems like he wants to stay in Kansas City because of how Mahomes has been. And yes, Mahomes hasn't been that solid this year, but I really can't see him wanting to break up that marriage, because Mahomes has a 10-year deal. And very likely Andy Reid might be retiring within the next 5-ish years or so. Bieniemy will be next in line to be the Kansas City Chiefs head coach. So if you weigh those options right there, what's a more appealing job for him? Waiting for Kansas City or taking the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach right now? I think the Kansas City one is more appealing. Then my second point, and then I'll let you go, Steve, is very similar to the first one, and that's Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Byron Leftwich, I say that because he was a former quarterback for the Jaguars back in the late 2000s, early 2010s, when they had Maurice Jones-Drew. And they were a fun team. But for the same reasons, they have Bruce Arians. He's going to be retiring soon anyway. So Byron Leftwich might wait to take that head coaching spot in Tampa Bay instead.
This is where I'm torn, because Eric Bieniemy, great offense coordinator. Byron Leftwich, we've seen he's a great coordinator too. My only thing is, do these guys have what it takes to lead an entire team? And that's why I'm really cautious with a lot of these guys, whether it's those two, Josh, especially Josh McDaniels, Brian Daboll. You know, you see Josh McDaniels didn't really have success as a head coach when he was coaching the Broncos. And I forgot, I think he coached, was he coaching the Browns too? But either way, I know he definitely coached the Broncos. He didn't see that much success, but he's seen a lot of success with the Patriots as an offensive coordinator. And then you see like a guy like Vic Fangio, one of the best defensive coordinators ever. and yet hasn't really had the most success as a head coach with the Denver Broncos. So maybe it's just the Broncos. Maybe he shouldn't be a head coach for the Broncos as becoming, you know, from being the coordinator. But anyways, or even Matt Nagy, he had that one good year, and really that was all reliant on that defense because that defense was just unreal. So these guys that are, oh, they're such offensive minds and or such defensive minds, but do they have the right mentality to lead a team? And that's why a guy like Sean McVay, you know, yes, he was an offensive genius, but he had the guts. He had what it took to lead a team. And then he appointed the right guys. He knew what he was doing. He knew how to run a team. And that's why he's seen, and granted, you know, the Rams have been good, but he's also helped make moves to make the roster even better, to get players that fit in. Goff, I think he inherited Goff. Goff didn't work out. Goff still had good years. It wasn't like Nagy with Trubisky where nothing was, I mean, that one Pro Bowl season really probably shouldn't have been a Pro Bowl season, but you can't knock it. But Mitch didn't look good. Goff had a few solid years before he really started to go downhill. But he wanted Stafford, and he got Stafford, and look at the type of season Stafford's putting up. So a guy like McVay is different than possibly those guys. I don't know. Maybe those guys do have what it takes. But I think a lot of times we get caught up in, you know, oh, well, because they put up so many points. Well, Bieniemy also has Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. If he goes to a team, and he probably will go to, usually when a team needs a new coach, usually it's more the teams at the bottom of the barrel. Do those teams have that same talent that the Chiefs do? No. Or Byron Leftwich, who is the coordinator for the Buccaneers, correct? Look at the roster he has. Brady, Mike Evans, Godwin, Fournette, Gronk. And then that, you know, that's all he has to worry about is offense. But I don't know. So for me, that's why it's tough to tell. And you saw Urban Meyer clearly did not have what it took to lead a team, especially an NFL team. And some of the things he did was just between, you know, being at the club during the season and just like, you're an NFL head coach. What are you doing, dude? And then kicking his kicker. Like, what the hell? Like, first of all, why the hell are you physically assaulting a player? And second of all, like, what gives you the right? Because you just shouldn't do that. And then he's calling his assistant coaches losers and all this. Like, dude, you're the loser. You can't win a game in the NFL. I don't care whatever success you had in college. This is NFL, and you suck. He sucked. So, TJ, you possibly have an idea, a candidate for the Jaguars?
I do, and I'm going to toss this name out there. I don't know if you guys, how you'll react to it, but Jim Caldwell, the former head coach of the Detroit Lions, and here's why. So in the four seasons that he coached the Lions, 2014, they went 11-5 and made the playoffs. In 2015, they went 7-9. 2016, they went 9-7 and made the playoffs. And 2017, they went 9-7. So, first off, I think the Lions made a terrible decision in firing Jim Caldwell. But I think what he can do with his experience and his resume as a coach and with his knowledge of the game of football, I think he could right the ship in Jacksonville. I think he can first win the locker room back, win the coaching staff back, and hopefully he can win the front office if he gets hired.
That's a really interesting guy. And you know, I like that because, and this is what, remember Castle, TJ, Josh, like when Alan Hahn was our guest on the episode, he was saying for the Jets and the Giants and all these teams that are hiring all these new guys, like, yes, you know, you want to try to get the new up and coming McVay or the new up and coming this guy and that guy. But he was saying, why aren't teams looking at, or his main thing was teams should look at veterans, guys who have already coached at the NFL, who already have had success. So a guy like Jim Caldwell, especially a team in Detroit who has not been good, especially the past couple years, and especially this year. And so for him to be able to lead the Lions to two playoff appearances in their last playoff appearances, might as well. He's got the experience. You know, he didn't have the best. Granted, those Detroit Lions teams had a lot more roster than the ones, you know, the one now. But at the same time, the Lions had never been a, you know, a Patriots or a Chiefs now or a Rams. They've never been like that. So for him to have success with them, and that's why I think them firing him has had some long-term effects. And same with the Bears firing Lovie Smith. When they fired him, I was really pissed off because he was coming off a 10-6 season. Yes, he missed the playoffs, but 10-6, usually you make the playoffs. And now since then, we've gone through Mark Trestman, John Fox, and now Matt Nagy. And this kind of leads into my next segment with NFL coaching is possibly other guys that will get fired. And you can put Matt Nagy in the list. So,
damn, I mean, quick to assume, I say.
Assume. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. There's no way he comes back. I mean, they just extended his contract last year with him and Pace to see if they can – to kind of buy them more time. And he just – Matt Nagy's awful. He's awful. So that team just – if you watch them play, they just look – they don't play for each other anymore. They just are all over the place.
All right, so then I'm going to ask you a question. Who should be the Bears' next head coach? Are you looking offensive-minded to develop your rookie quarterback? Or you got a defensive-heavy team that might be able to benefit from a defensive-minded coach. So where are you leaning towards right now?
For me, I'm not leaning towards either, really. I'm leaning towards guys who have experience. To be honest, well, I've seen this. I don't know how it could happen. I mean, I'm sure it's possible. I don't know what would it take. But, like, you know, Sean Payton possibly could leave the Saints, knowing that, and you're shaking your head. I'm just saying, he played for the Bears.
Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin, they're not leaving. Just move on.
You never know, especially what's the Saints' future looking like? It's not bright. Michael Thomas is not the same. He will never be the same.
Alvin Kamara is still there. Their defense is
He's a running back. They're replaceable. Their defense is getting old. Malcolm Jenkins, old. DeMario Davis, old. Cam Jordan, old. They have a lot of old roster. They don't really have a QB for the future. Don't tell me that Jameis Winston's their guy for the future because he's not.
No, but someone like Matt Corral can be.
Well, so then you got to see what they do in this offseason. So I'm just saying, that's definite, and I think that's more of a long shot. But a guy like Sean Payton, if he wants to change the scenery, the Bears would be the best fit. Or, to be honest, you know who I really think would be okay, pretty good? Jim Harbaugh. Bring him back in the NFL. He's had success in the NFL. He's had success at Michigan.
Considering how well he did in Michigan, I don't know if he'll want to leave.
Well, that's another thing, too. So that's why it's tough. But, like, to be honest, I don't want a McDaniels. And I don't think really the Bears should look at McDaniels. You know, then do you look at, like, a Brian Daboll? I saw one guy. Oh, I think it was.
I got a name that could also be thrown around for a candidate to take over for the Jags. Even this guy has won a Super Bowl recently. I don't know how well you guys think his skill is, but he has had experience coaching with some big names, and that's Doug Peterson.
You know what? That's actually someone for the Bears could possibly look at because, I mean, I don't know. It depends if they want to. They already try the Matt Nagy, the Andy Reid tree. So do they like completely stay away from that, or do they try to, like, you know, well, Doug Peterson's totally different than Matt Nagy. So he's a possibility. I think he's going to get looked at this year. I think he's going to be one of the more popular guys when they actually go through interviewing and all that, because again, all these coordinators are getting all the attention, but I think a guy like Peterson's slowly going to turn to the top of a lot of people's list because he's won a Super Bowl. He's won games. He has experience as an NFL head coach. And really, I think the problem with Philly was just it was just from top to bottom. It wasn't just Peterson's fault. I think Wentz had a big part in that, with why they were kind of butting heads and all that. So I don't think it was necessarily all on Doug Peterson. So yeah, that's an interesting name. I'm trying to think. I think it was Leslie Frazier. I saw the Bears could possibly. So I don't know. It's tough.
But
for me, like,
Frazier. See, I don't think Frazier's a bad option. I like him. You know, he didn't have the best track record in Minnesota, but I don't know if he'll want to leave the system in Buffalo. I think he probably likes working with McDermott.
Well, that's another thing too. It's like, you know, these guys, once they leave, they're not guaranteed their spots back. Like, you know, Bieniemy, he's got that offensive coordinator job on lock. So if he leaves and doesn't do well, you know, look at Matt Nagy. He's now like, where the heck is he going to end up? Because clearly he couldn't run an offense. So, you know, he might be out of a job. He might be either going in college or Arena Football League, where he played for how many years. So
I have another idea.
Yeah.
We're getting very complicated with like who's outside. There's someone that's currently in the Bears system that I think could be a very good head coach, because he has been a head coach before. And that's Chuck Pagano.
He's not there anymore.
He's not there?
No, he was let go before the season. Then Sean Desai was promoted to defensive coordinator.
Okay. Well, so bring back Chuck.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Chuck, but I don't think that's – I think his coaching days are over. So it's tough, because there's a lot of candidates, but you really have to – you can't just – not everyone's going to be the next Sean McVay. Not everyone's going to be this – well, Adam Gase, no. That's just – if any team hired – I think a high school hired Adam Gase, because even colleges were smart not to bring Adam Gase on their staff. So – and then I guess I'll throw the Giants fans this question. Joe Judge, safe or not safe?
He's already basically safe. I don't think Mara wants to go through the embarrassment of firing another coach after only having him for such a short period of time. I don't know how to feel about it personally. I think we could do better, but at the same time, it also calls into question if Patrick Graham's job is safe at DC. And if it's not, he could also be a potential candidate for either of these teams. That's one name that has been tossed around. Castle, what do you think?
I have to agree. I unfortunately think that Joe Judge is safe, just for the pure reason that we have so many young guys on this team. And I don't think Mara's going to want to play head coach carousel again. He should be fired, not just of the despicable games that we've played, but how he handles himself at the podium when he says that he sees positives in a game where we totally got destroyed on both sides of the ball. I mean, don't know what kind of logic there is there. Now, in terms of Patrick Graham, that's going to be interesting. I think if Joe Judge is fired, Patrick Graham then might take the gamble of taking a head coaching job. I mean, he has gone out there and has said multiple times that, you know, his job is DC and New York, and that's it. That's where he wants to be. But hey, if he might be in a position where, you know, he's part of Joe Judge's system, and if he's not part of that equation and teams are knocking on the door offering him the head coaching job, he might take it. So Graham is definitely a name that can be thrown out there, but not that heavy. Depends on how longer Judge stays. And unfortunately, he's going to be around another season.
Yeah. But you think Gettleman's gone?
Oh, Gettleman's definitely gone. They said he's retiring after this season, but that's just a really funny way of saying he's fired.
I think
save his ass, right?
Yeah.
I think as Giant fans, though, you got to have some sort of like optimism on this aspect, that are you under the impression that Daniel Jones is gone, or you think he'll be your quarterback next year?
It's very up in the air right now. I think these injuries are definitely taking a toll on his stock. But who knows? He was Gettleman's draft pick, and he was a huge gamble. So if Gettleman's out of the equation, I really don't know, because it's such a toss-up. You could say, well, you can't blame him because of the line, because of all the injuries that his weapons have experienced. But on the other hand, this was supposed to be the make-or-break year, and I think a lot of fans will want him gone at the end of the season.
So if he is potentially gone, I would think if you're cleaning a house, you might as well get rid of Judge also, because let's say you get a rookie quarterback and Joe Judge does the same shit next year, then what? You're going to be dealing with the same thing the Bears are dealing with right now. You're going to be dealing with the same thing the Jags are dealing with, where you have a rookie quarterback who's going to have two quarterbacks in 2 years, very, very easily could look like a Sam Darnold situation. I don't think it'll get to that extent, but it could very likely happen, because multiple systems are tough to comprehend. New faces, it just doesn't really mesh well. So if you're cleaning house, you might as well clean house and get a fresh start.
I don't disagree. And, you know, it's funny because me and TJ were talking about this, but definitely Gettleman, probably Judge, and Jones should be gone. But I think the biggest question mark is Barkley. That's, and, you know, me and TJ were talking about it. He's a very big question mark for the future of the Giants. I think he tweeted recently, or something came out, how he wants to stick around and see things through. But, you know, it's tough because the guy's been hurt for almost 30 games for his whole career. And, you know, this is a number two pick. And if he's had more hurt seasons than healthy seasons, why don't we get rid of him now before he has another traumatic injury that takes a real toll on his career?
See, the thing is, though, I'm just going to say what he said about the Giants first. He's like, this is where I started my career, where I would love to finish my career. I know this thing is going to turn around, and I would love to be a part of the reason it does. So, like, he wants to stay in New York. It's obvious. The thing is, when it comes to trading him, I don't know if any team is going to take that salary hit. It's almost $8 million in the cap hit, you know?
Yeah, I think teams would just let him wait.
What team is going to be able to afford that with current situations and current teams having to fill gaps where they need to, you know?
Well, I think teams would just wait and see the Giants would just end up releasing him. Like, same thing to OBJ. You know, no team wanted to that huge cap hit to trade or to claim on waivers. So, or trade, they didn't want to give him up. And then he got released. And then when he was released, none team wanted to claim him because of that huge cap hit. So that's why the Rams waited and then signed him. But to be honest, what a team like the Bears and Giants need to do is they need a clean house, and really clean house. I mean, I'm talking about, I don't know necessarily with the Giants because I don't follow them as much as I do with the Bears, obviously. But I know the Bears, they need to get rid of their president and CEO. They need to get rid of Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy. You got to get football minds in there. You get enough with the business people, this and that. Get football minds in there because it's a family-owned team. You know, these are not just like these rich. I mean, obviously they're rich and have a lot of money, but like they're not like a Jerry Jones running the team. The Bears have owned the Giants for how long? The McCaskies have been owning it the entire because George Halas started the Bears. So they really need, if they want to start to win, because really the Bears have not seen a lot of success in a while. The last time they won a Super Bowl was over 30 years ago. The last time they made one was like 15 years ago. You know, the Giants have some more recent success, but even lately it has not been good at all. So really, I think not only do the head coaches have to go GMs, but you got to start looking even the upper from then. So it's definitely, I'm hoping, and I think it will be an interesting offseason and carousel within the NFL. There's going to be a lot of moves being made. Forget free agency and trades and all that with the rosters. I think really one of the more interesting elements of it's going to be the coaches and the GMs in front office, because I think, you know, you're going to see some major changes with some teams. So definitely, and I'll keep an eye on that during when it starts to happen. So my next thing I want to talk about and is the COVID outbreaks. And I'm not going to lie, it's getting to a point where it's starting to get real bad. I mean, I know multiple leagues. Luckily, the MLB season's done, and they don't have to worry. I mean, they're in the whole lockout, so they have nothing to worry about. But the NFL, even just on Twitter right now, the Rams have 25 guys total on COVID reserve list. Guys like Von Miller, Odell. They had Daryl Henderson on there and a bunch of other guys. The Browns have a lot of guys on there. Even the Bears just added Eddie Jackson, Allen Robinson, and a couple other guys. I know the Packers added a few guys. The Giants have had a few guys. So, and the NFL actually came out with the new COVID protocols. And I'm trying to read a little bit what it says. This is because of the increasing cases and the new variant. So as I look at this, I want to ask you guys, first of all, what are your thoughts on kind of out of nowhere? What are your thoughts on the amount of cases within the NFL and even the NBA? I know the Bulls, a couple of their past games have been postponed because they don't have enough guys.
Nets have been playing with 8 guys, like half the team also.
The Knicks have a lot of guys missing, and even the Lakers. There's a lot of teams missing a lot of guys, and especially like stars. So do you think it's because of this new variant? And they said this new variant is very, very transmissible. A lot of people get it, you know, very easily. So do you think it's because of the new variant? Do you think the guys were maybe not following the protocols as intently as they did last year? So Josh, what do you think the reason could be?
I don't really know. I think we've kind of just been getting like to the point where people have forgotten that COVID's still going on. And I think that's definitely a factor, regardless if it's like the new variant or not. So, I mean, people are going to say what they want to say. So I really don't know. That's the best way of putting it. I don't know.
That's fair. So they said, so effective immediately, this is for the NFL. I don't think the NBA has come out with any new protocols. So all clubs will implement preventative measures that have proven effective. So everyone has to wear a mask, regardless if they're vaccinated, booster, or unvaccinated, they have to wear a mask. All meetings have to be either remote or outdoors where it could be space apart. And obviously it's outdoors, so supposedly it's safer. No more in-person meals. So I'm sure a lot of the meals are to go. And no outside visitors. So probably no families. I think they were starting to get, families were allowed to come, or fans even. So I don't think that's at the stadiums. I just think that's at facilities or, wherever.
It's on team travel.
In travel, okay.
So no outside visitors on team travel.
Okay, so that's what it is. So, and then I'm sure, who knows, NBA should probably look at their protocols and stuff like that. So, I don't know. For me, to be honest, I think these guys were following the protocols, but it's just crazy to think because, throughout the season, you had guys who were placed on the list. One or two from each team here and there. But now within the past like week, every team has like at least like it seems like 20 guys or 15 guys, 10 guys. Like they have double digit guys and some key guys too that they need on the reserve list. So it's like they've been with each other all year and we're fine. And now out of nowhere, they're landing on this list. And same thing in the NBA. All season was like pretty good, very rarely was, especially some of these star players on the list. And then boom, now like the Bulls can't even play their games because they don't have enough guys. So, so now do you think like the NBA would implement a bubble if this trend continues to happen? Or do you think they just try to, that's the last,
I think that's the last resort. in my opinion, because yes, it was successful for the time they were in last year, but how many players would, I think you would see players would rather opt out and just be with their family as opposed to doing a bubble again, because even when the bubble happened, there were people who opted out and didn't feel comfortable going. And then there are people who said that they didn't want to be isolated from their family for God knows how long again.
So, Castle, what are your what are your thoughts on this? I mean, it's kind of tough. No one really knows the answers, and no one really knows why. But like, I mean, this is starting to really make a serious impact, and we've all kind of, you know, accepted and gotten used to COVID in our everyday lives. You know, they came out with vaccines. A lot of people are now vaccinated, getting the booster shot. But do you think with this really alarming rates of increasing cases and guys getting COVID, do you think both leagues should be scared? And are, you know, you're nervous that, you know, I mean, I don't think it'll be another shutdown like it first was, but what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not really too involved with knowing the science that goes behind this new variant, but you know, something that was pointed out that has been publicized and emphasized a lot is the transmission rate, how easy this new variant is. So I definitely think, you know, it's being spread around more. I'm sure guys, you know, are getting a little laxed, which we all are in some ways. You know, this has been going on. We're coming up to the 2-year point. I'm not, you know, justifying it, of course, but we all get laxed with it. You know, I'm sure these guys are not wearing their masks when they're in the locker room. I mean, if you saw the video yesterday of the Lakers locker room when that rookie hit the game winner, you know, none of them were wearing masks, and, you know, and they're celebrating, which is all fine. But, you know, it is stuff like that that is going to increase the transmission. And, you know, teams are traveling constantly, going to different states where I'm sure the infection rates are higher and whatnot. So, I mean, you know, it's definitely concerning. I mean, I feel like this came out of nowhere. Like, out of nowhere, guys were just hitting protocol, COVID protocol, like crazy. And it's, you know, really starting to stack up. I mean, Cleveland is going to be playing with no one basically on Saturday against Oakland. And, you know, like we said, the Bulls game's getting postponed. Nets only playing with 8 guys. Knicks are losing guys. So it's definitely becoming an issue in sports. I don't think we'll see a shutdown because, listen, at the end of the day, no one involved wants to lose the money. So I don't think a full shutdown is going to happen, but I definitely think you could see issues with players who are not vaccinated, and I think incentives will start to be increased. And, you know, guys like, you know, again, not calling anyone out, but guys like Kyrie Irving, he could be backed into a real corner now with these COVID cases increasing. And not just Kyrie, there are a ton of guys in football and basketball who aren't. You know, he's just the biggest name right now that we know of. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Goodell and Silver do to move forward with this. It's definitely concerning for sure. But like Josh said, a bubble is not realistic. At that point, players are just going to want to be with their families. Football is not going to do anything like that. So I think we're just going to see procedures and policies continue to be increased. And I think we're going to see a lot more incentives for guys who aren't vaccinated, or even incentives for guys to get their boosters.
Yeah, I think in the tweet or the statement that NFL released, they really were encouraging players to get the booster. But guys like Baker Mayfield has voiced out his complaints with the protocols and stuff like that. So, you know, players are really going to start to get upset with this. And you know, I hope, I don't, like I said, I don't think there'll be a shutdown or any of that. I'm just trying to think of, you know, it's happened before. So I just put it out there. But either way, you know, there's definitely going to be a lot of tension now with teams and players and owners and the commissioners. And hopefully this kind of just passes by. But even, you know, for me at school, it was crazy because we get shut down spring of 2020. And then, obviously, we can all attest to this all of last year, how many times we were getting tested, how many isolated, you know, everything was to go. there's no sports really.
I just want to put this out there just because you're bringing it up. My last semester of college, I was tested more for COVID than I've ever been. Like, it was every week I was being tested before class.
Yeah, it was always at least once a week, and then sometimes twice if they randomly selected you. This year, not that I'm complaining, but I didn't have to get tested to go back. I mean, granted, I am vaccinated, but I don't get tested at school. You can eat in the dining halls. You don't have to wear your mask all the time. You still have to wear it inside. But same thing, a lot of the rules are relaxed compared to last year. And I think, you know, that was the same with the leagues and all that. We see fans back in attendance full, you know, stadiums allowing full capacity. So it's going to be interesting to see what additional measures are going to be taking place, because as of now, you know, I don't think the leagues are going to be able to keep going with all these guys getting added to. I mean, there's more COVID cases or, you know, guys on reserve list than the actual like IR. So, you know, it's definitely going to be, and it seems like they play. I mean, Odell literally played Monday night and then the next day was placed on the list. Or the NBA, like you were saying, like Russell Westbrook was just added to the list. So, and the Bulls, like, they play these games, they win, and then the next day they're on the list. So it's a chaotic time right now between the two leagues. And that's why I'm sure the MLB's, you know, they have their own problem with the lockout, but at least they're not dealing with this. But I don't know what's worse, the lockout or trying to deal with all this COVID cases.
Are there any updates with that? Just curious.
I think, you know, the players and the owners
really the MLB are, and the MLB Players Association are not talking until January.
Yeah, so.
Oh, at least they came out for the holiday, you know?
Came out yesterday. They're not talking until at least January.
And they got a little holiday break. They don't want to talk to each other.
But it's like Manfred not budging, and then Tony Clark also not budging. So it's kind of I guess it's a good thing that they're not talking, so they can at least have some time to sit and think about what they want to bring to the table. But for the fans, it's kind of a disappointment.
Oh, it's a big disappointment, and I have a lot of words for Manfred that I'm not going to share on air right now. I can, you know.
Yeah, please don't. We don't need a 3-hour rant of your love letter to Rob Manfred.
Oh yeah,
That's just for 3P After Dark.
Yeah, that's so. I'll keep that shut. So we'll have to, you know, keep up with the updates with the COVID cases, and hopefully everything will kind of die down. And hopefully it's just maybe a little funk right now with COVID, and like I said, it'll pass by. Who the hell knows at this point? With everything going on now, some crazy times. So, and then just to kind of start to wrap things up and quickly talking, you know, college football, that's a chaotic time. Did you guys see the video of the number one recruit in the class flipping from Florida State to Jacksonville?
I thought that was awesome. He's one of the best things I've seen like in a really long time, because I don't know how in depth you guys saw, but on his Twitter, he also had him wearing all Florida State, like his back, his profile, everything. Even his bio, and then to do that was just amazing. And I'm curious to see like reactions like from Florida State, because you can only imagine what they're thinking right now.
He's the new owner of Florida State University.
Yeah, I already saw some people giving some very nice words for him. So it's crazy. But you know what? How can you blame the kid? He's a cornerback. And he wants to go play for one of the greatest defensive backs of all time. It's a very smart move.
I think it's, you know, it's really unique, and especially a talent like him to go to Jackson State, which has had some, I mean, really good NFL players in their history. I mean, how can I not mention Walter Payton? He's an alumni there. But being in a historically black university, they don't get guys like that all the time. So for him to go there, I think it's going to be, you know, really good for that program. And it's going to open other players' eyes to say, you know, they can put guys in the NFL. Like, they are still, you know, we can still work with that talent and, you know, to make some of those bigger name guys and top guys, like, maybe opt to go for, and we see that a little bit in college basketball, how some of these guys, instead of going to a Kentucky or Duke, sometimes they go to some of these historically Black universities and colleges. So who knows, maybe now he's starting to set that Travis Hunter, right? That's his name. Maybe he'll set that trend for football. Well, I thought that was crazy. I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere just on signing day. Like, he was committed to Florida State for a long time, and even into, I mean, I'm sure he had a feeling he was going to flip, but for the most part, the media and everyone else thought he was committed to Florida State. And he even said in his little write up on social media that his dream was to be a Seminole, to play for Florida State. And as much as it hurts him that he won't do it, like, this is what his calling was. This is what, you know, he believed was the right thing to do. So what a move for Deion Sanders. And I think it'll be a good move for the future players and the future for these historically Black universities in recruiting some of the top talent. Not that, you know,
I think you'll see in the coming months before, like, the May 1st decision day and after All-American game, you'll see some more guys maybe flip their mind and want to play with him, because, like you mentioned, there have been some NFL greats like Herschel Walker, Walter Payton, who have played there at Jacksonville State. So good for Coach Primetime.
Oh, yeah. So that was definitely awesome.
Some Primetime. Yeah. That was Primetime.
That was Primetime. Yeah, that was a Primetime move. So, and then, you know, some of the transfers that we've seen. I mean, that's my another kind of question, and we don't have to go too in-depth with this, but you see college basketball, there's a decent amount of transfers, but for the most part, not too many. College football, I mean, the transfer portal is just guys enter it like no one else's business. I mean, the amount of players at once, the amount of players that enter it a day, it's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's that crazy. Do you think, I mean, yes, it's exciting, but do you think it's also ruining, you know, these, not these
I
players?
I think if they wanted it to be like an excitement type atmosphere, not an atmosphere, but like, we saw how hype the decision day was, and we know that there's more decision days to come, but I think that there should be a deadline for transfer portals, because it's essentially the same thing as commitment letters. You're just transferring schools, even though you had eligibility. But I don't want to see someone transferring out of Penn State to Wisconsin and they decide June 2nd when, like, the rosters are filled, and now you have a four-star who's transferring. Like, that's going to defeat some of these freshmen who might have decided to commit there and whatnot, or affect other guys who transferred. So I think if you have these decision days, which I love them, I think they're great for college football, I think you got to do the same thing for the transfer portal.
Yeah, I think
that's not just football. That's every sport. Because I know basketball is also a big deal.
And I mean, it's interesting. And, like, obviously, like, you know, sometimes you can get a lot of good talent within the transfer portal to help your team succeed and take you to, I mean, look at like a Joe Burrow transfer from Ohio State and then took LSU to the national championship 2 years after. My thing is, it seems like really back then, or, you know, back a few years ago, the transfer portal was meant for guys that, you know, maybe were transferring for, like, legitimate reasons. And not that these guys now don't have legitimate reasons, but, like, you know, maybe, like, they just needed to be closer home for whatever reason. You know, maybe a family member was sick, or they needed to be there for the family. So being able to go to school closer and play football closer, like, was really essential for them, like that. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of other reasons, like injury. Maybe, like, they got injured and now the teams just kind of were just going to let them loose or not play them anymore. So other schools were going to give them a shot. Now it seems like you look at a guy, they're committed to one school, and then you look at a year later and they're on a completely different school because it's like, oh, I didn't play, so let me go to another school. Then why didn't you go to that school to begin with? Or why didn't you, you know, I don't know. A lot of times, you know, these like top recruit, like Quinn Ewers, that one just did not make sense to me. He was committed to Texas. He's from Texas. I mean, that was his calling. Just go to Texas. He then decommits from Texas to go to Ohio State because obviously we know Ohio State's offense is unreal. You know, that Justin Field was going to be leaving. So then C.J. Stroud gets the starting job. He has a Heisman-type season. Quinn Ewers and his family wanted the promise that Ewers was going to be the starting quarterback. Ohio State said no, which made sense because Stroud did a phenomenal job and then leaves. Like that to me just doesn't make sense. And that's what's, I think, ruining the transfer portal. While like certain cases, you know, like grad transfers, that makes sense. But I don't know when guys are leaving because.
Also, sorry to cut you off, but I just thought of it because it's probably going to help you get even further with what you were saying. Another point is how COVID has also impacted it because everyone was granted another year of eligibility. So I think you have all these five-star freshmen who are coming in, but you also have these grad transfers that you're talking about who are fifth years and possibly 6 years also are transferring.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Now you have all these guys have extra eligibility that like
a Sean Clifford coming back for Penn State.
Yeah. You know, or like, I'm trying to think like technically like for Wisconsin or like Bryce Young. He's not going to transfer, but obviously, but like really he should technically be a sophomore. In reality, he's like a redshirt. I mean, he's had so many years of eligibility left. Now he's going to be a top pick. He's not going to, once he's eligible to leave for the draft, I think after next season, he's going to be gone. But certain guys who like, they're going to keep up using this eligibility. So then these high ranked guys below them are going to probably leave. So I don't know. It's been a crazy time. And like, don't get me wrong, it's really chaotic and fun to watch. But at the same time, you got to think about it like maybe it's a little too out of hand and too crazy. And these players now are not working for the position, for the starting position, like they used to have to. Now they're just using an easy way out through the transfer portal to go to schools to be able to start right away. And I don't think that's what the transfer portal was meant for. And now that's like the main reason why. So we'll let you know. I'm sure between the signing day and the signing periods and the transfer portal is just going to keep happening. Bowl season's beginning. That's going to be fun to watch. So it's definitely a good time in college football right now. They probably have a.
Before we wrap up, I'm just putting it out here. Michigan's winning the whole thing. And it pains me to say it, but Michigan's winning the whole thing.
Even over Bama?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is Harbaugh's year to win it.
This is Harbaugh's year to win it. You look at the senior leadership that they have. You don't really have that among the other teams. Aiden Hutchinson, I really didn't think he should have been in the Heisman to begin with. I think there are more qualified guys. He finished second, which really shocked me. I would have had Kenny Pickett or even C.J. Stroud over him. But he finished second, which says something because you rarely see defensive players just in the conversation. But he finished second. He means everything and beyond that to Michigan. He bleeds the maize and blue. Like, he's everything that Michigan football represents and stands for. And he is that physical guy you want, like, putting his life out on the football field. Like, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and that's going to lead Michigan to the promised land in the next two potential games for them.
I do think Michigan has a good chance. I think it's either going to be Michigan or Alabama.
I look at Georgia. We talked about their defense the entire year, unstoppable, but they clearly had no offense that could counter Bama's explosive offense. But a team like Michigan can counter that explosiveness because they also have their explosive running game in Haskins. McNamara is no scrub. He's definitely not an elite quarterback, but he's definitely no scrub. He can make the right plays. So I do like the chances.
I agree. I'm just,
and it'll be a change of teams. It's nice.
That would be nice. You know, and then bring some Big Ten, some some fame, you know. But I feel like you can't count out Alabama. You can't count out Bryce Young. Whenever you count them out, they just stick it to everyone and prove why they are the best of the best. So it's definitely going to be a fun it's a different playoff, you know. I mean, you saw Bama. Georgia's been in there a few times. But Michigan and then Cincinnati, I don't know. That one, yes, they're undefeated and all that, but that boggles my
mind. It'll be a victory in my book if they don't lose by more than 20.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. So, well, that's all the time we have today. And that's all the time for the season. Like I said in the beginning, it's the season finale. But don't worry, we will be back in 2022. The new year, we're going to take a little holiday break, you know, relax a little bit. But we will be back and better than 2022 for season 5. So a quick few shout-outs before we wrap things up. Thank you, TJ, social media, for always staying on there and putting out great content and hanging out with us in the episodes, offering great knowledge and stats. And all
that. Unlike us, he's going to be working during the holiday. So he's going to get that Instagram popping during Christmas. So,
Oh yeah. He's going to be working. I thought he meant like actually like working. I was like,
yeah, no, he's working. He's working that Instagram for us on Christmas.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm always going to make the spicy content for the boys.
Exactly. So thank you. And
of course, thank you for having me on as always. And thank you for the opportunity.
Hey, of course, my guy, of course. So, and a few thank you to our partnerships, Liberty Shirt Co. They're the best. Love being partners with them. They got the best shirts out there. So thank you to them. And then thank you to Kevin from Wild Chat Sports. Again, Wild Chat just keeps growing, keeps going, putting out great content. And, you know, Kevin's been a great partner. So thank you to them. And so, that's all the time we have here. The last show of season 4, last show of 2021. I think it was a good run. And like I said, looking forward to 2022. So thank you, everyone.